Hello, honeys, and welcome back to another episode of Spilling the Tea. On this week's episode, we are going to be talking all things endometriosis, and I don't know what it is. For some reason, all day, and actually probably all week, I've been kind of a bit nervous about this episode. I know for so many women listening, especially if you've been diagnosed with endometriosis or if you think you have it, you're going to be hanging on to my every single word in this episode, and I just want to do it justice. Like, it's something that my heart breaks for women going through it. When I have clients who come to me and I see endometriosis marked in the form, I literally put down the consultation sheet and I just say, tell me your story. Because there is always a story. It's never straightforward. It's never like, oh, I had my first period and I got diagnosed 6 months later. It's always, when I was 15, this happened. And then I was 18 and then I was 20 and then I was 21 and now I'm 27. And it's never straightforward. So yeah, I'm going to do my very, very best today to kind of give you all the information on it that I've learned over the last couple of years between my own research, because it's an area that I'm so passionate about, because I just feel like medically we're just completely let down, especially in Ireland. Like, it takes 9 years approximately to be diagnosed with endometriosis in Ireland. And I think part of that is women's pain just isn't really recognized, or, you know, it's kind of real Irish mentality of like, ah, you're grand, like, take a painkiller, we just stop, kind of like, shut up and put up, you know, like real Irish mammies. Like, even my mum back in the day, like, I always said, like, we need to literally be hit by a bus to not have to go to school. And I feel like a lot of kind of Irish mammy traditions are kind of like that as well. And sometimes that just kind of bleeds over then into, like, you know what, yeah, you just need to kick up them and go ahead and go to work or go to school. And then actually, no, this is real pain. Like, it's not normal. So yeah, like, everything I talk about today, again, it's my own experience working with clients. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a gynecologist, I'm not claiming to know every single bit of this. It's a really, really complex issue. But hopefully by the end of this episode, it'll give you a little bit more guidance. Even now me talking about it, like, my nerves getting at me. I don't know why, I just feel pressure. So anyway, let's get the episode started. Let's spill the tea on endometriosis. I'm so excited to announce Ethos as our sponsor for season 2. If you follow me on Instagram, you've probably heard of them already. Ethos are an Irish CBD and hemp brand set up by couple Amy and Fergus, who are both extremely lovely people, may I add. They have a range of CBD oils and hemp teas, and they have blended organically grown hemp from Wicklow with adaptogenic herbs, which I'm obsessed with, and botanical extract to support a range of well-being needs. Their rest range supports better quality sleep, and their balance range helps to reduce daily stress and anxiety, and their active oil and repair balm are focused on reducing inflammation and aiding recovery from workouts. I recommend adding their supplements to your routine if you're looking to improve your sleep quality, stress levels, or reduce inflammation. Their teas are also a really, really nice addition to your bedtime or daily routine. You'll find Ethos in most pharmacies or health food stores, and they also kindly gifted me 20% off discount code for all of you lovely listeners. If you head to the link in my show notes below, you can subscribe there, and it'll be sent straight to your inbox in addition to a gorgeous bedtime yoga track to help you de-stress and unwind before bed. If you're curious about trying the products, check the digital consultation tool on their website to help you select the right product for your needs, or listen to episode 1 of season 2, where I speak to Amy about the science and benefits of CBD. So, what is endometriosis? You may have heard this on social media, you may have seen different people talking about it. If you listened to my episode last week, I had Sinead Hegarty online on the podcast, and Sinead was so kind to share her story with us, her diagnosis, how she's doing now. If you haven't to listen to that episode, definitely listen after this. But endometriosis is basically a condition where tissue grows in areas that it shouldn't grow in. And this tissue is like uterine tissue. It's the same tissue that like your period is. So this tissue responds to our hormones. And what can happen is it might grow in your fallopian tubes. It might be in your bowels. It might be in different parts of your uterus. It might be in your ovaries. And it can cause a lot of pain. The symptoms that you're going to see with endometriosis, pain is the main one. And on the HSE website, this is what's listed. So it says the main symptoms of endometriosis are pain in your lower tummy or back, usually worse during your period, period pain that stops you from doing your normal activities, pain during or after sex, pain when peeing or pooing during your period, feeling sick, constipation, diarrhea or blood in your pee during your period, and difficulty getting pregnant. You may also have heavy periods. So I actually think there's so much missing from that list. And I think if you are someone who, you know, you might be listening to this and be like, well, I don't have this and I don't have that, this might kind of throw you off a little bit. Endo, from my perspective, is an inflammatory condition. And what that means is there's a fire somewhere. And my kind of viewpoint on this is, if you have a fire in your bedroom, you're not sitting there at home being like, ah, sure, the fire's upstairs, it'd be grand. If there's a fire, there's a fire in your whole body. And this is the problem sometimes with kind of like the Irish healthcare system and kind of the medical perspective, is that you go to a gynecologist for one thing, you go to gastro for someone else, you go see someone else for mental health issues. Like, they don't talk to each other. It's not connected. And yet our body is not separated into different rooms that aren't connected. So generally, if you have that inflammation, it can affect your whole body. So because of that, I see other things that go along with endometriosis. I think mood is massively affected. So anxiety, depression, I see things like aches and pains. Like, I know Sinead Hegarty, for example, like one of her really weird symptoms is she gets a really sore scalp when she's ovulating around her period. Your whole body can be inflamed. Things like redness on your skin, acne, like these things aren't mentioned. And they're so, so important, because even the way it says here, like pain around your period, that's also completely inaccurate. Like, some of my clients with endo have pain regardless of when their period is. They could be on day 27 before they get their period. It could be on day 11. Like, it really doesn't really matter. IBS is hugely, hugely linked with endometriosis, because your uterus and your bowels are right beside each other. And I would say IBS is one of the biggest misdiagnosis for endometriosis, that you're in your doctor year after year, your digestive system is getting worse. You're also like, oh, my periods are quite heavy. And it's like, here's the pill for your period. And here's, you know, I don't know, laxatives or Motilium or just drugs, over-the-counter medication to help with your bloating or with constipation, whatever it is. So IBS is massively linked with endometriosis as well. What causes it? I feel like the debate is really out in this one. Like, on the HSE website, they say there's no known cause and there's no real diagnosis or like definite definition of what causes it. From our perspective, from a natural medicine perspective, we look at it from kind of a few different areas. Number one is your genetics. So the first thing I will ask clients if they come into me and they're struggling with period pain is I ask them about their family history. And I kind of think like our generation get a little bit screwed over in this, because like your mum probably barely talks about her periods, let alone your granny. Like, your granny, if we're told to shut up and put up, like it takes 9 years for our generation and we're pretty on the ball these days. Like, your granny defo was not talking about her period. So endometriosis generally runs in families. So, you know, have that conversation with your mom. Like, what were your periods like? A lot of the time your mom might be like, oh yeah, I had really bad periods in my 20s and then I had babies and then it went away. So, you know, for as long as you were around, like with your mom, you probably really never, maybe didn't see her experiencing really bad period pain the whole time, but she might've been struggling for her whole 20s until she had kids. So genetics definitely plays a role. The second thing is it's linked with your immune system. And while it's not fully seen like an autoimmune condition, people who have endometriosis have a higher risk of autoimmune conditions. So for example, it's really common to see something like Hashimoto's. Hashimoto's is autoimmune thyroid with endometriosis. You may see lupus. You may have things like celiac disease that come in there as well. These are all autoimmune conditions. So we definitely know there's some immune dysregulation there. And from my perspective, again, from working with clients over the years, and actually really interesting, I had a conversation with Sinead as well on the podcast about this. Sometimes with things like endo and when your genetics are involved, it's like as if, imagine you have a dormant volcano sitting there in the background and something will trigger it. So you have these genes, and depending on how your life goes, what you eat, where you live, stress can really affect this as well. Like, then that might trigger this response in your system. So I find a lot of people who have chronic stress, then will develop something like their autoimmune condition might flare up, or the endometriosis then kicks in. I know for Sinead, she was saying that she really feels after she got her COVID vaccine, and then she had, was it dengue fever? I think she got that when she was in Bali, and she was like, my endo went mental after that. So I've seen clients who have had like really bad glandular fever, had shingles, had things like the mumps, like kind of weird chronic viral things. And that often kind of can be drivers for the endometriosis. So we have genetics, we have immune system, then we look at hormones. I kind of put endo in a different category to things like PCOS and hypothalamic amenorrhea and heavy periods, because those things are definitely caused by hormonal imbalance, where endo isn't actually caused by hormones. Hormones just make it worse. So the way I think about it is that tissue that responds to hormones is already there. And if you have too much of the hormone called estrogen, and if you guys are like OG spilling the tea fans, you will know why this is significant. So I always say estrogen makes things grow. So forget about endo for a sec. Estrogen makes your period grow. And if we know endo tissue responds to estrogen the same way as your period responds to estrogen, so it's going to make your period bigger, it's going to make that endo tissue grow as well. And if you've endo tissue wrapped around your bowels, in your fallopian tube, in your ovaries, that's going to be a problem. So estrogen dominance massively can drive endo, can light that fire, can make it worse. And I'll obviously talk a little bit in detail about it today, but go back and listen to my podcast, episode one of the very first episode I've ever done on how your hormones work, and the episode on heavy periods that we talk so much about estrogen there. So it's really, really important that you understand where estrogen is coming from, like how you can help it through your environment and through your food. Next thing we look at, and I've actually never heard this been mentioned before by any client, there's never any specialist that's ever said this to any of my clients, is actually looking at gut health. So in 2018, there was a really, really interesting concept that was discovered with endometriosis, and it's called the bacterial contamination hypothesis. And what this means, I don't worry, I'm going to dumb it down for you like I always do. The research shows that women with endometriosis have a higher level of gram-negative bacteria. Now that sounds fancy, pantsy, or sounds complicated. A really well-known gram-negative bacteria is E. coli. So gals, if you've ever had the UTIs, that is your E. coli. And this bacteria produces a toxin called LPS. So they're called lipopolysaccharides. And these lipopolysaccharides trigger an immune response. Your body's like, oh my God, freaked. There's a fire in the house. What are we going to do? And it triggers you to your immune system to react. The best analogy actually I give for this is, imagine there's a spider in your room, right? And instead of just going in and kill the spider, so there's basically bad bacteria in your gut. So instead of your immune system just targeting your gut, it can cope and it just burns the entire house down. I feel like I would probably be guilty of that. I hate spiders. So imagine it that way. There's bad bacteria in one place, and instead of just targeting it, the whole system goes on fire. So this is why, as well, you're going to see a lot of digestive issues go along with endometriosis. And traditionally, I'm going to talk about kind of the medical approach now, but generally, let's put them on the pill. The pill will fix, inverted commas, talking about this now, fix your endometriosis. Fair enough, it might switch off your hormones. It might address it from an estrogen perspective. But what birth control is going to do long term, it's going to impact your immune system, because most of your immune system is your gut health, and any kind of drugs, including the contraceptive pill, is going to affect your gut health, and it's going to actually drive that bad bacteria. So this is why lifestyle medicine is so, so important alongside the medical approach. And in saying this as well, I want to make this really, really clear from the start. When I see clients with endo, I'm like, go and get your surgery, get that tissue removed. And it's what you do next that is so important, because like that, we can focus on immune system, we can focus on estrogen metabolism, we can focus on gut health. And this is what really, really frustrates me, that why is this not talked about more? On the HSE website, and literally like my blood was boiling this morning when I was doing research on this. So our healthcare system, HSE endometriosis, you get into treatment. It says there's currently no cure for endometriosis and it can be difficult to treat. Deciding which treatment was best. And this is the treatments list for women, right? Pain medication, hormone treatment, the combined oral or contraceptive pill or patch. Even that word, the combined oral contraceptive pill, like boils my blood, right? So I've just mentioned estrogen, and The combined pill has synthetic estrogen in it. Why in God's name would you give a woman with endometriosis synthetic estrogen when estrogen makes that tissue grow? Fair enough, the mini pill, I can get behind that. The Mirena Coil is progestin only. It's only one kind of artificial hormone. So the mini pill, the implant, and the Mirena Coil, the Clina Coil, they're all progestins. There's no estrogen in them. And traditionally, they're the ones you're going to be seeing for use with endometriosis. And honestly, girls, like, I know I'm very like anti-birth control sometimes, but these are the cases where I'm like, go in the Mirena Coil, like get some relief. You're not going to be in bits every single 2 weeks. It'll give you time to work on your gut health, to work on your immune system. But my issue is women on the combined pill with endo. It makes no sense. And I think doctors who put people on that don't understand the mechanism to it. So we'll continue through the HSC treatment for endo. Then we have progestins, which is the one we've just talked about, surgery, laparoscopy, hysterectomy, and HRT after hysterectomy. There is no mention of lifestyle medicine here. And what's more frustrating, the more I dug, like I looked at other websites online, other countries, like there's one here in Australia, and they talk about lifestyle medicine, they talk about immune support, they talk about gut health support, they talk about anti-inflammatory supplements, they talk about other things. It's like, why is that not listed anywhere? There's not one single thing on their website here that mentions about lifestyle medicine. So it's just so frustrating. That's what we're taught. That's what we're given. So basically, going back to that again, medically, their approach is progestin-based birth controls, like I just mentioned. And again, what happens there is it will help slow the estrogen growing, and it gives women a lot of just a break, because it's so hard. Like imagine with women with endo, like you only feel proper sometimes for a week of the whole month, maybe that week after you're getting your period. Whereas the week of your period, you're in absolute bits. The week after, you might feel a bit more normal. Then you ovulate. So many women feel off when they ovulate. And then they have horrific PMS for 2 weeks and then they get the period again. So this is what I mean. Sometimes the Mirena Coil just gives you a bit of a break. The next thing is a laparoscopy. And a laparoscopy is this literal, it's like keyhole surgery, right? So the only way to really be diagnosed with endometriosis is through this surgery. And this is one of the reasons why it takes so long. You cannot diagnose this through an ultrasound. You can diagnose another thing, it's called adenomyosis. And Sinead Hegarty spoke with this on her on the other podcast. And this is inflammatory tissue in the walls of the uterus. There's not as much we can do about that. Like really, a hysterectomy is the only real cure for that. But obviously lifestyle medicine works so well. Sinead's doing so well. But a laparoscopy is the only thing for endometriosis to really say, yes, you definitely have it. You need to go in, you need to look inside, and they see the tissue and then they remove it. And a lot of women, I'm sure, listening who've had endometriosis and have finally got that diagnosis have had this surgery. Now, the problem is, I have two problems here. Number one, there's two types. You can get a thing called an excision. An excision literally goes in and it like chops away that tissue. It literally goes in and it cuts away all the visible lesions to the root, the core. And then you have another thing called an ablation. An ablation is like a laser, but the laser doesn't always get that root. So it's almost like, I don't know, like picking a spot. And sometimes, you know, you get the spot and you have to see blood to really know that like the spot's gone. Do you know what I mean by that? Whereas you just kind of burst that white head, there's something left in it. I know that's such a weird analogy, but that's kind of how I think of it. So the problem is the women who've had ablations, like I've seen clients, honestly, guys, they've had 3 or 4 surgeries. And it's because you've just burnt it away. It hasn't actually got the core. You haven't got the kind of root of it. And you're literally told, it's like no lifestyle medicine. That's great. Surgery is a success. And we'll see you now in a couple of years when you need to get it done again. Like what? It just makes no sense. And this is what I mean from my perspective. Go and get that surgery. No amount of herbal medicine, no amount of probiotics, no amount of meditation can get rid of your earlobe, right? And this is the same thing. That tissue that grows in your uterus, the endometrial tissue, it's literally like me trying to remove your finger giving you herbs. Like it's not going to happen. So that's why medicine is so important. That's why we need to work together as a team, and it shouldn't be us versus them. I think sometimes like I've literally had clients come back to me saying like, oh, my specialist said like nothing I eat makes a difference. And these are specialists who work with women with hormonal issues every single day. And they're telling people that. Like imagine me telling people not to get surgery, it's not going to work. Like I actually think it's literally malpractice. I think it's a disgrace that they can do that. Even now I'm getting so annoyed talking about it. And the problem is I have so much respect for doctors. Like I feel bad for them, because if you walk into your GP, and this is something, again, like women come into me and they're so frustrated and they're so disheartened by the medical system. And I'm like, it's not their fault at the same time. You walk into your doctor, your poor GP who had a child with croup before you, and you're coming in being like, I'm flooding in work. Like, I have to go home early. A pad lasts 20 minutes. I can't wear tampons anymore. My marriage is falling apart. I can't have sex with my husband. Okay. All they have to give you is painkillers. They can give you tranexamic acid, which helps the bleeding and the heavy periods, or then give you birth control. They don't know. Their hands are tired. They've never learned lifestyle medicine. They don't know anything else. But what needs to change is the conversation around it. They should be able to be like, this is all I can do, but I know a nutritionist who can do this. I know a herbal medicine that can do this, and educate themselves on the topic. Actually, maybe send this episode to your GP. Oh my God, could you imagine? I'll literally probably be like, no, maybe actually, no, do send this to your GP. Nothing I'm saying, it's not me saying, let's go out in the field and dance around under the sun. Like, do you get me? That this is, everything I'm talking is all science-based. So as much as I'm into herbal medicine, and some doctors are very, very quick to slam herbal medicine, and kind of my argument against that is, have you ever smoked weed? Most people probably have. If you haven't, fair enough, but a lot of people have. And think about how powerful that plant is, right? We've all experienced, well, I'm not saying I have, I'm not saying I haven't, but people who smoke weed have experienced that plant, what it can do. And why people think that other plants don't have the same healing properties, have the same phytochemicals in them. Fair enough, they don't all make you high, but every single herb has its own function. So it's kind of funny how people just like to pick and choose which ones work and which ones don't work. Sorry, that's a bit of a side note there. So I always think that's an interesting way to think about herbal medicine. Lastly, the other treatment for endometriosis is a hysterectomy, or to have kids. And I think this suggestion is very, very interesting, because it kind of just goes to show, by the time someone finally gets that diagnosis, they're told, just have children, that'll fix it. Which means you're probably late 20s, early 30s. You're not going to tell a girl who's 20 to go and have babies. So that, I think, is just a very, very interesting observation. And that doesn't always suit people. Imagine being 27 and single and you're opting bits every single month. The doctor's like, just go have a baby. Like, are they mad? Do you mess? It's just so bizarre. So that's kind of your medical approach. And again, I'm very, very pro-surgery. I'm not against it, but it's what you do next that's so important. So what can you do? This is what I would do with my clients. The other thing I'd say about endometriosis, if you're listening, you're like, oh my God, is that me? I always have that pain. I've had horrific periods. And guys, I don't just mean like period pain. Like, endo, it's bad. Like, it could be horrific cramps 3 days before your period. You're fainting. It doesn't always have to be heavy. And again, talking to Sinead in the last episode, she made such a good point. And I even saw Sinead actually as a client before she was diagnosed, and I didn't even pick up on it, because it just, she didn't have the classic symptoms. Sinead didn't have any heavy periods and things like the sore scalp. And she kind of had, she's had really, really low iron, which I'll talk about now in a sec. With endo, she kind of had more unusual symptoms. Yeah, it's something that often just gets missed as well. It doesn't always just have to be the traditionally like in bits with heavy periods. You can have really, really painful light bleeds as well. So just be careful that you're not kind of limiting yourself. Sinead actually said she diagnosed herself through TikTok. She was like, oh my God, I literally have all those things. And it was just some random girl on TikTok listing the symptoms that she has. So very, very interesting. So like I said, sorry, I was going off on tangents, you know me by now. When I see clients and we're querying endo, I basically say, right, let's come at this guns blazing for the next 3 months. I know how to fix heavy periods, period pain, sore boobs, PMS, IBS. I'm so confident in my ability to help people with those issues. I've been doing this for the guts of 8 years now. Lifestyle medicine, nutrition, and you throw herb medicine in the works there, you're laughing. It's very, very rare someone comes back to me and it hasn't worked, okay? But the people who do come back to me and it's 3 months later and they're like, Ash, I am doing everything. I am taking my herbs. I'm not doing my coffee. I'm working on my hormones. I'm still in bits. These are the people then we're pushing to go back and get that diagnosis. Go back to your doctor. Do not take no for an answer. Your pain is valid. And it's a problem as well, because we can't all gauge like what is pain to you could be completely different to somebody else. And especially if it's something that you've always had from day one, like you might just think that's what everyone experiences when they get their period. But if it's something that you're like, no, this is really, really affecting my life, Do not leave your doctor's office until you go get a referral for further testing. So what I do in the clinic. Number one, we focus on your immune system. So I mentioned earlier that a lot of endometriosis can be linked to a kind of an autoimmune response, and your gut health comes in here as well. Your gut makes up 80% of your immune system. So that is a problem. If your gut's not working, your immune system is not going to be working. The number one thing that I do first for my clients with endo is I actually remove gluten from the diet. And I kind of laugh about this sometimes because I know for a fact, either so many of you listening have been like, oh, I've gone off gluten before, I was trying to lose weight. Like it's a real thing, like women do, I'm trying to lose weight, I'm off the gluten, or like, I'm so bloated, it must be the gluten. And I'd say for most women, or most people in general, actually, gluten's probably grand, right? It's probably fine. But people have autoimmune conditions. This is when my ears perk up and I'm like, okay, let's try this. And what I get my clients to do is go strict as possible gluten-free for about 8 weeks and observe how they're feeling, observe their symptoms, observe their inflammation. And again, it could be something as basic. People come back to me like, oh my God, Ash, my skin's not red anymore. Or Sinead, like my scalp's not sore anymore. Like it can't, doesn't always have to just be hormonal issues. It can be other areas. So gluten is the first thing. The second thing I look at is actually casein. And casein, I've chatted about a good bit on this, is actually the protein found in cow's milk. And it's super interesting because people, men and women, who react to gluten often have this cross-reactivity with casein. So gluten is the protein found in grains, okay? Casein is the protein found in cow's milk. And I always say, like, give this another 10 years and I bet you casein allergy will be seen the same way as gluten allergy will be. And if you've listened to other episodes, I talk about casein in relation to things like heavy periods. I always talk about, like, if you were a snotty kid, so like as a child, the ear, the nose, the throat, chest infections, recurrent tonsillitis, runny noses, it's going to be hay fever as you get older. You could have psoriasis, you could have eczema, you could have acne, painful periods. It normally runs in families. So like you're in bits with hay fever and so is like Uncle Bob, if that makes sense. Or like your dad has psoriasis and your brother has eczema or something like this. So those are the people I look at for casein. I don't just take everyone off milk. I obviously go through all their little tick boxes, but I know for a fact loads of you with endo are going to be like, that is itchy, me to a T. So we look at limiting the gluten and the casein. And what we're doing here is we're putting out that fire. All of a sudden, your immune response goes down. Your immune system doesn't feel as attacked anymore. And now we have a chance to repair it, put out the fire and fix the damage that's been done. Some people come to me and they've done Googling, they've listened to podcasts and they're on a good few supplements. But the way I describe it is like, imagine taking, for example, like vitamin D is really good for your immune system. Your zinc is really, really good for your immune system. And you're taking them every single day. You're putting out the fire and then you're having a cup of tea and a slice of toast for breakfast and you're relighting it. So it's like one step forward, two steps back, one step forward, two steps back. You're never really going to really get to where you want to be. So this is what we do is we're going to reduce for a couple of weeks and focus massively on immune support. So I mentioned them there. Your vitamin D is probably one of the most important things for your immune system. And I think it's almost kind of sad the way we kind of think about vitamin D, because I always say, like, by calling it a vitamin has completely undermined how important it is. Your vitamin D acts more like a hormone in your body. And if you're low in hormones, guys, people take notice. Like you're low in thyroid hormone, your doctor puts you on medication for that. Like it's, you know, you're low in estrogen, you don't ovulate. So vitamin D, just because it's thrown in with like vitamin C and you're like, ah, should be grand, I get that from my food. You don't get that much vitamin D from food. It's actually really hard. And most food fortified with vitamin D is vitamin D2. It's actually really hard to absorb. And the other problem is we all love sunblock, which is not a bad thing. I'm not saying don't wear your sunblock, but nowadays, even the absorption of vitamin D on a lovely sunny day, we're all mad about our factor 50. So we don't actually absorb it through the skin anymore. Like, so yeah, vitamin D acts more like a hormone in the body. So one of its jobs, if you remember as well around COVID, vitamin D got so much good press because they were all like, oh, it supports lung inflammation. And I'm like standing in the corner being like, yeah, we know. We've been using vitamin D for years for all kinds of inflammation. It doesn't just, again, know there's a fire in your bedroom and goes to the fire in your bedroom. It's going to focus on your entire system. So vitamin D, super, super important. Your zinc is also really, really important. So zinc is found in the soil. It's quite hard, I find, to really get from food nowadays. It also comes in seafood. It comes from some things like sunflower seeds and pumpkin seeds. But like you need to be eating a massive quantity of them. And the problem is a kind of vicious cycle. If you've poor gut health and your zinc quality is not great from food. You're not going to really be able to absorb it. It's, and you know, it kind of goes around in circles. And also the contraceptive pill depletes your zinc. So if you're on the combined pill for endo and you're going to be low in zinc, which means the immune response side of things is going to be worse. So fair enough, you're not making, well, no, you actually are making estrogen because you have the synthetic estrogen in, but it's kind of, again, vicious cycle. You're on the pill, meant to be helping the hormone side of things, and you're actually probably driving the immune side of endo and making that worse. So zinc, really, really, really important. And then things like antioxidants. So the best way to think about antioxidants, again, they're me standing there with a hose. They're putting out that fire. And these come from your fruit and vegetables. Like, don't fall into the trap as well of buying expensive supplements. The amount of people come into me and they're on really expensive, really good quality supplements and their diet is literally woeful. Like, we're all obsessed with protein. We can blame like Instagram for that. And people are like, oh, but like I hit my 130 grams protein a day. Like my macros are on point. And I'm like, okay, cool. Where are your micronutrients? Like, where's your vitamins and minerals? That is what keeps you alive. That is like the nitty gritty of your immune system. And I don't know if I actually said it there, but zinc actually makes up your white blood cells and they are your army. Think of your white blood cells are the ones that are going to fight infection for you. And that's why we love our zinc. The other thing it does as well from a period perspective. So I always prescribe zinc if someone has painful periods and if someone has heavy periods. It's really, really good for those two things. Again, because it's helping your body kind of put out that fire. From a herbal medicine perspective, there is brilliant herbs. And I kind of don't want to get too much into herbs today because I want this episode to be accessible for everyone. And like, here's me saying like, I can only prescribe herbs after consultation. And also I've no consultations for 3 months. Like, I know that's really, really annoying. But herb medicine is absolutely brilliant. Like, there is herbs, there's one called astragalus. I don't know if you've heard about that before, but astragalus actually supports like chronic inflammation. It's really, really good for kind of autoimmune conditions. And there's another specific herb called Romania, which is a Chinese medicine herb. And that is brilliant for endometriosis. Like, I've just seen such good results with that. The ones you can start using at home, your turmeric, I'm sure you've heard of that before, throw it into your stir fries, make a curry once a week. You should try turmeric scrambled eggs. I know it's a kind of a random one, but turmeric does best where there's fat involved. So like, I remember my dad one day was taking just like a spoon of turmeric with a glass of water. Like, my dad will do anything you tell him to do, even though I won't get into it. He's definitely not going to listen to this episode. But yeah, my dad just does random stuff. He reads about it once in like the newspaper and he's like, the newspaper said. And I'm like, Dad, what do I say? Like, I'm the nutritionist. You know, dads though. So yeah, my dad was just taking like a spoon of turmeric. And I'm like, that is so hard to absorb. You actually need fat for absorption with turmeric. And then to make it even better, black pepper enhances the absorption even more. So like scrambled eggs, little teaspoon of turmeric, black pepper on top, absolutely fabulous, really, really good. And turmeric is anti-inflammatory. So again, it's going to put out fires. Your cinnamon is also a lovely herb in there. So throw it into like your porridge in the morning. And ginger is really, really good as well. Like, any of my clients who come to me who suffer things like heavy periods, like clotting in their periods, which is literally what endo is. You're always going to see like a lot of clots and tissue. Ginger is really, really good for circulation. Next thing we look at is your gut health. So in terms of like digestion, so on one side, your gut health is going to focus on your immune system. And on the other side, when we talk about gut health, we look at how much good bacteria and how much bad bacteria you have in the gut. And I mentioned E. coli earlier on, that sometimes it can be an overgrowth of this bad bacteria. And this causes problems. So some of my clients with endo, like if they have a lot of IBS, a lot of digestive issues, the first thing I'm going to do is focus on gut repair and gut support. And really, again, I know it's annoying saying it, but I really come in here with herbal medicine, like this amazing herb called berberis. Had a little compound called berberine. And honestly, it works the same as like antibiotics. So what you don't want to do for situations like this is go and get antibiotics for a gut problem. Because yes, it's going to, let's say, kill off the bad bacteria, but it's going to kill off your good bacteria as well. And when your bad bacteria is gone and your good bacteria is gone, there's nothing stopping that bad bacteria from replicating again. So our goal is kill off the bad bacteria while supporting your good bacteria. So just be really, really careful of antibiotic use if you've been diagnosed with endometriosis, or to be honest, actually for any kind of gut issue. Like, it kind of, it doesn't always work 100%. Like, if you listen to my episode on thrush and BV, you'll understand exactly what I mean and kind of the mechanism behind it. So again, herb medicine can be amazing here. We look at things like probiotics can be brilliant for gut issues. You're looking at more fiber in your diet. There's actually a challenge to try and get 30 different types of fruit and vegetables into your diet. So for anyone listening, like, try and do that now next week. You'd be surprised how hard it actually is. Like, myself included, we're such creature of habits. And like, I don't know about you, but it's like sometimes during the week, I eat because I have to eat. I know it sounds mad and I always admit this, like being a nutritionist, but like I eat for fuel. Like, I actually want to inconvenience sometimes because I'm so busy. I'm just like, oh, whatever. So unless I actually plan my meals and like, you know, actively gone and gone out of my way to get different vegetables, like, it's so easy just to run into the supermarket on your way home from work and grab what you're always used to grabbing. So make sure you're getting different types of vegetables. That the best way to think about it is, imagine each different type of vegetable feeds a different type of gut bacteria. So if you guys only eat like carrots and broccoli, like, your poor gut that loves like rocket and onions and garlic and bananas and everything else, they're literally dying in the corner. Like, the poor guys. So you want to make sure you're getting that massive variety. And then obviously then we're going to focus on individual issues here. So if someone has bloating, constipation is one of, if not the most important thing, I think, overall, when you're looking at any kind of health issues, to be honest, because that is how you get rid of toxic waste. Your body does not want that in your system. So the first thing I always do with any of my clients with hormonal issues is address constipation. If you feel like you need more advice on this, we have brilliant, like, I have two brilliant nutritionists who can help you alongside myself. I'm going to leave a booking link below at the end of in the show notes, so we can have a little look and see that, like, a lot of the time when endo, I'm like, go and get the gut right first. You could book in one of our gut health nutritionists, and then you can even come to see me in a couple of months' time, then in 3 months when I have more appointments available, to focus on the endo side of things. But like, gut health is always, always step one. Last but not least, in relation to the way I work in the clinic, so number one, we focus on immune system. Number two, we focus on getting your gut as healthy as possible and getting rid of all that bad bacteria. And number three is hormones. And this is looking at breaking down estrogen. So I'm not going to go into like really, really big detail on this because I literally have an entire episode, like I mentioned earlier on, which is the heavy period episode and the first one on like how your hormones work, but kind of the crash course in estrogen. So basically your body makes a certain amount when you ovulate. And I always say, like, there's good estrogen and there's bad estrogen. So the good estrogen makes you happy and horny. And the bad estrogen makes your boobs sore, makes your periods heavy, makes that endo tissue grow. Synthetic estrogen comes from the pill. Other estrogen comes from our environment. So there's actually things called xenoestrogens. And they're so scary. I actually remember learning this years ago, like when I was like 22 in college, being a nutritional therapist. And I literally came home and I just was like, we're doomed anyway. I might as well get a takeaway. Like, I was so deflated because these xenoestrogens are everywhere. So they're in plastic, they're in our cosmetics, they're in fragrances, they're in cleaning products. Like, if you use, like, I put hairspray in my hair earlier on today and I was like, oh my God, the xenoestrogens, or like putting perfume on, your nail varnish on, your nails, your Yankee candles, your light in the evening time. So again, cover this in a previous episode, but what I say first is start reducing your toxic load. So look at where you can get rid of these chemicals. So if you're a tan gal like myself, I only use Tan Organic. Tan Organic sponsored the last couple of episodes of the last season, and all their tan is completely natural. I've switched to something like the wild deodorant. So like, your deodorant you're putting on every single day, like what you're putting on your skin, I think, and staying on is most important. Getting rid of like a plastic drinking water bottle, move to a glass one. I have a steel one that I use every single day. If you're using like reheating plastic, let's say plastic soup, little carton in the microwave, or using plastic cooking utensils, like all these little things add up. And I'm not saying that your endo is bad because you use, like, I don't know, a Dove. Like, am I allowed to say that actually? Am I going to get like sued? But you know what I mean? Any kind of non-natural, say, deodorant, right? But if your body is literally sweating in the corner, breaking down your pill, breaking down your hairspray, breaking down your tan, breaking down deodorant, and you're constipated on top of all that, well, the poor estrogen that's actually in the corner causing issues is not going to stand a chance. So it's always like, reduce your toxic load. Try and get rid of the amount of toxins your body has to process. The other things in relation to estrogen is, again, ding, 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 your cow's milk. And it's that protein again called casein that can really drive hormonal issues. So the kind of wiggle room around this, and some of my clients are like, oh my God, stunning, that's actually so much easier, is you could actually have things like sheep's milk, goat's milk, buffalo milk. So like, if you love feta, if you love buffalo mozzarella, you can have sheep's milk yogurt, goat's milk yogurt. It's actually a fab Irish brand called the Velvet Cloud. I'll actually link them below because they're literally just like, like, I follow them on Instagram, you see them literally there with like the sheep in the background and they're talking on their stories. And like, it'd be so nice to actually help support an Irish brand as well, because I think some of the supermarkets just dominate with non-Irish brands. And anyway, I digress there, but the sheep's milk yogurt, honestly, it doesn't even taste like feta. Like, if you're someone, you're like, oh my God, I hate like anything goatsy or sheep milk cheese. It just tastes like plain natural yogurt. So it doesn't have to be, it's not that you're going vegan, it's just moving away from the cow's milk. Then we look at what we can do. Again, cover this in a previous episode, but little quick tip here. If you're a TikTok person, raw carrot. So I've been doing this for years and now my client's like, yep, I'm on the raw carrot salad already. And I'm like, okay, how do people know this? And then I've just recently discovered that apparently it's like a trend going around TikTok. The raw carrots are being promoted for hormones. And again, like the vitamin D, I'm like, yeah, we know. I've been doing that for years. Like, hello, in the corner over here. Like, no one ever listening to me. But the raw carrots are brilliant for hormone detoxification. And doesn't have to be raw. Like, I would even get clients like grate up a carrot and put it into like the spaghetti bolognese, for example, or into a stir fry, or carrots and hummus as a little snack. But they're brilliant for like mopping up your hormones. And the other thing in that category are phytoestrogens. And these are things like flax seeds are brilliant. Think of these like sponges that come in and mop up your hormones, kind of like the carrot. Kidney beans and lentils and falafels and all those plant-based proteins are brilliant. And we're so, so bad in Ireland at eating these foods. So if you're someone who has loads of dairy and not a chickpea to be found, like, think of the balance there. Your body's really going to struggle there with the excess estrogen that you may be putting into your system. Last thing on the agenda there with estrogen is, estrogen normally kicks in the first half of our cycle. And for anyone not on birth control, the second half then we have a hormone called progesterone. Do not confuse progesterone, our hormone, with progestin, which is the Mirena coil and the mini pill. The only similarity is they make things lighter. They thin the uterine lining. So our natural progesterone, for anyone just like generally, even if you're not, even if you don't have endo, is really, really good for helping with period pain. It's like a natural painkiller. It's going to make your periods lighter. It's really good for mood. And it helps support excess estrogen. So in an ideal world, we want to have as much progesterone as possible to lighten your periods, to help prevent that tissue from growing. Again, whole episode in this, the one on PMS will cover this. But basically, the number one thing that makes your progesterone low is stress. So good night and God bless. We are all doomed, including myself here. But look, I always just say control what you can control. So, you know, maybe like this week, I've had such a busy week. And instead of getting up this morning and doing a workout, I just stayed in bed for an hour and just sat there and I scrolled my phone and I was very unproductive. And then I got up and had a mad day. But at least I gave myself that hour. I was like, what do I need right now? Do I need to do that workout or do I need to sit and chill? So just be kind of mindful of what you need. If you're up the walls, maybe reduce your caffeine intake. Like, are you having even cups of tea? People don't think it's as bad as coffee and it isn't, but it still is caffeine. And we're all like tea fiends in Ireland. Like, you might be having tea every 2 or 3 hours with your cow's milk. Just going to throw that in there. So just about reducing that down. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to leave a list of the other episodes to go and listen to at the end of this podcast. Last but not least, my non-negotiable with clients with endo is your bloods. And what I mean by blood testing is we want to make sure everything is optimal. The difference between me and you, so if you have endo and I don't, it's like as if your body has to work that little bit harder just to keep yourself well, right? Because you have this inflammatory issue. So with bloods, B12, I could have thrown B12 up here with breaking down estrogen. That's one of its jobs. As we know now, how important estrogen is for endometriosis. And the most frustrating thing that I see in my clinic in relation to bloods is everything is fine. You're within range. They were all normal from their doctor. They don't have a copy of their bloods. No, my doctor said I'm within range. Within range. Okay, so low B12 is about 180, give or take. And let's say high B12 is around 800. The range always changes. This is what I learned about a couple of years ago, right? So low B12, 180, high B12 is 800, and you're within range. Like, are you 250? Are you 710? Like, what is within range here? And you cannot be within range if you have endometriosis. You have to be optimal. You have to be top of the range. You have to control what you can control because you've so many factors going against you already. So one thing we can control, we want to make sure that your B12 is optimal, your iron is perfect, your thyroid is where it should be, and make sure to go and get a full thyroid panel done. And what that means is, I'm going to do a whole episode on thyroid as well, but make sure that they're checking things like your T3 hormone. Normally there's just your thyroid stimulating hormone, which is called your TSH, and your T4, but you want to make sure your T3 is checked and thyroid antibodies, because I mentioned earlier on about autoimmune conditions, and this is just going to check and see if you have autoimmune thyroid alongside endometriosis. To be honest, it's very similar to what like I've already covered. If you did have autoimmune thyroid, there'd probably be different supplements I would add in, different herbs I would add in, but like the basis is probably the same. Your iron, I said earlier, I'll come back to this. I found this so interesting when I learned this a couple of years ago. So the tissue that endometriosis responds to is the same as your period. And your period, when estrogen comes in, it grows. And your period, that tissue fills up with blood, okay? The second half of your cycle then, progesterone drops. And when progesterone drops, you get your period. Now, imagine you have this tissue in your bowels or covering your ovary, right? That tissue is going to respond to estrogen, so it's going to grow and it's going to fill up with blood. Progesterone drops and has nowhere to go. There's no opening, there's no vagina there waiting for that blood to come out. So this is why those tissues start to form. And I actually find it really, really common for women with endometriosis to have low iron or low ferritin. Ferritin, again, that drives me mad. Like low ferritin, I think is like 11 or it could be 15. Whereas, you know, ferritin can go up to, like I got my blood, so my ferritin was 100. And I would consider anything less than 40 low for women with endo. So like, you know, they're even say 35 and the doctor's, no, you're grand, you're within range, but it's too low. And like your iron, your ferritin are so, so important. There's like a catch 22 that when your iron is low, your periods become heavier. And then if your periods are heavier, you're going to lose more iron. And then your iron is low and they become heavier. Do you see the kind of vicious cycle there going back and forth? Again, I cover this quite a lot in the heavy periods episode. So long way of saying, get your bloods checked. I have a highlight on my Instagram, all the lists there. Your doctor should be on board with this. Like it frustrates me as well when doctors don't want to check it. And I understand like it can be expensive and this kind of thing. But the mentality in Ireland with blood testing is like, but what you need them for? Like you're again, you're grand. My sister-in-law is from Israel and they just get like a blood test once a year because they're like, well, obviously, like why would you wait for things to be wrong? Why not just check it before it goes wrong? Makes so much sense. Some of my clients, I actually have to say to them, pretend you want to get pregnant and your doctor will do your bloods for you. Like it's just disgraceful, it really is. So with endometriosis, you're the exception to the rule as well. Like stuff like your vitamin D, you're often told like, ah, sure, we don't test vitamin D. Everyone's low in vitamin D, just take a supplement. But like if your vitamin D could be 20 or your vitamin D level could be 75. So those two people need different levels of vitamin D. And this is something, again, I've mentioned earlier, like how important it is. You need to know your levels. So, you know, when you're going in, you need to be like, I have endo. I'm not the exception to the rule. Like I need to know what my levels are. Okay, so another thing that comes up again and again in relation to endo, and I've seen really, really good results of this, is a supplement called NAC. So it stands for N-acetylcysteine. And one of the most important things when we're talking about hormone detoxification, immune support, is liver. Liver kind of got like a bad rap. It kind of reminds me of gluten. The poor things are over there in the corner being like, it's not what you think. Because people say the word detox and doctor's like, no, your liver is always detoxing, blah, blah, blah. And it is. Like, I'm not standing here being like, we're going to detox your liver. But there's certain things that support liver detoxification. There's two phases, well, actually nearly three phases of liver detoxification. And there's a compound called glutathione, which is an antioxidant. And it's one of the most important factors in estrogen metabolism. And NAC helps support glutathione. So something that I would give my clients, especially if they're trying to get pregnant with endometriosis, I kind of come at this guns blazing. So I came across a really, really interesting study as I was doing research today in NAC. And basically a study was done with 93 women. They're split into two separate groups, one that was given NAC, and they were given 600 milligrams three times a day for 3 days in a row, and then take a break. That was for 3 months. 600 milligrams, three times a day for 3 days of the week for 3 months, right? And basically after the 3 month mark, the control group that had the NAC, their cysts had actually reduced. Whereas the ones that had no NAC, their cyst actually has increased. So it actually says reduced by 1.5 millimeters, whereas there was a significant increase of 6.6 millimeters for those women who actually didn't have the NAC. It also says in the NAC treated group, 24 patients cancelled their scheduled laparoscopy due to decreased or disappearing cysts. Like absolutely mad, the research on this. This is a scientific study. This is not me again wandering around the field, talking about my herbal medicine, talking about Chinese medicine that doesn't always relate to what everyone believes in. But like, surely if you were a gynecologist working with women with every single day with endometriosis, you should be aware of studies like these. That's a little side note about your NAC. Last but not least, how do you get that diagnosis? So I mentioned earlier on, the only real way is your laparoscopy surgery. So if you've been told, oh, nothing came up on your ultrasound, or you had like a vaginal internal test done, or if you like an internal scan done, that always doesn't come up. So just be really, really aware of that. Like if you're like, no, like my mum has the same thing, and that's the next thing, like family history. If you're like, my mum was in bits of her period, like I know this isn't right. Don't take no for an answer. Do not take no. Your pain is valid. The other really, or last kind of really, really interesting thing, and if any doctors listen to this who know the answer, I'd love to get your two cents. Definitely send me a message. There is a marker called your CA125, which can be tested on a blood test. Now, normally where CA125 is mentioned is with women with ovarian cancer. And it's almost like an inflammatory tumor marker, as far as I'm aware. Again, this is just me telling you what I know, what I've seen. And usually women with endometriosis actually might have this marker, might be higher on a blood test. Obviously does not mean there's ovarian cancer, but it just means that there's these tumors, these cysts, inflammatory tissue that's in the uterus. For some reason in Ireland, this is never checked. Whereas I work a lot as well with even clients up north or in the UK. And nearly all my clients who come to me from the UK have this already done. So I just don't know. I don't understand why it's not done in Ireland. I would tell my clients then when they say we have a consultation, go back to your doctor and ask them to check this. And most of the time then when we ask, it normally gets done. I have got questions before, even like, why do you want to check this? And I'm like, how do you not know these things? You know, like it's not my job. Like this is, again, I know these things because I've done so much research into it. Because the first time I ever saw someone with endo, I was like, I need to help these poor women. And again, to start me talking about it, I feel like I've deflated now a little bit. I'm not as jittery, but I just, my heart just breaks for them. It really, really does. So just want to mention that at CA125 as well. So last but not least, guys, I'm actually going to answer some questions. I got Q&A up on Instagram. So let me have a little look and see. Okay, first question is, does endometriosis always affect fertility? Have a lot of symptoms, but conceive three times the first try. To be honest, it doesn't always. Like this is something as well I think is a complete misconception. I think it's actually really cruel. Like I have girls who were in their 20s and I'm told like you're probably never able to have babies. Where in the other side of things, I've had women who said to me, like, I actually have endometriosis and I never knew until I was getting a section with my second baby. So it doesn't always mean that you're going to have fertility issues. Like, it depends where the tissue is. So obviously, if you have tissue growing in your fallopian tube or in your ovaries that is affecting ovulation, that's a different story. But please don't wear that badge being like, I have endometriosis and I'm going to have infertility. Like just because you've that diagnosis doesn't mean you're going to struggle to get pregnant. I know Sinead is saying to you on the lab podcast that Molly May has endometriosis and she went for her surgery and she got pregnant really quickly after that. So a lot of women are really, really fertile. And Sinead was told as well, like, you know, just to let you know, you're really fertile after you get the laparoscopy surgery. So yeah, please don't kind of stress yourself out with thinking that. Like step one, let's get your hormones really, really balanced, but it doesn't mean that you're going to have fertility issues. So another question, had laparoscopy, had endocell removed and the marina coil to stop cell growth. This is really, really common, girls, as well. Like a lot of the time they'll say to you, do you want me to put in the marina coil when you're getting surgery? And I'd say like, if you're not planning on having babies anytime soon, like the marina coil can go in, I think it's for 5 years. So imagine like 5 years of not having to worry about it. Like, you know, you can manage all these lifestyle factors I just mentioned. The next part of that message was, how far in advance of trying to get pregnant would you recommend to get the coil removed? So I think because I work so much with fertility issues, I always see like the worst cases. Like people don't come to me, well, they do as well, like who just want to get pregnant and just want to do everything possible. I've also seen the women who've had 3 miscarriages and are really struggling, or they come off birth control and they've no periods. So I would say like, give yourself 12 months if you can. You know, if you're someone just on the marina coil for, I don't know, contraceptive, like that might be different. But like if you've hormonal issues like endometriosis, it might take more time. And we're very much like planners. So you're like, okay, I'm going to come off that in May and I'll be pregnant by June. So then by the following September, I can do this, blah, blah. Like it does not work like that. So give yourself plenty of time is what I would say. Gynecologist has suggested the pill, but I really want to try and conceive the next year. Is this the right choice? Again, I think if conception and fertility is on the brain, I would definitely try and hold off birth control. You're told with endo, you have to take birth control. It's going to stop the spread of estrogen. And this also frustrates me. I'm like, how can you stand there and say this is the only thing that works when I've just done what? Nearly an hour episode on all of the things that impacts your hormones. I've 3 podcast episodes all covering progesterone and estrogen and all those different things. So it's frustrating when you're told this is the only option when there's so many other things. Like imagine that girl on the pill drinks 4 liters of milk a day. Like, and I'm just saying that as an example, but there is other options. But I definitely think that if you're not going to be on any birth control, you need to focus on lifestyle medicine. You have to do something to help your body put out the fire and to manage the hormones. Just a little question here, a little side note that might give you some hope. A girl said, just want to say thanks for attempting a podcast on this. I've suffered for 14 years undiagnosed. So this is why I'm so like invested and so emotional about doing this episode, because I just have seen that story so many times. And basically, she said, I had to go private in the end just to be listened to. Disgraceful. Then it happened all within a few months. So, you know, that can be obviously an option as well, that if you have the means to go private, it might be worth actually doing that as well. Okay, last question. Can you have endo if you have the other symptoms but ultrasound was cleared as okay? Guys, be so, so careful with that. You cannot diagnose endometriosis through an ultrasound. It doesn't always show up because you can't see every single part of the pelvis, parts of your tissue. So a lot of the time it won't show up in ultrasound. When they actually go in with keyhole surgery, it's going to be there. And it's so hard because it's so invasive. Like you actually have to go for surgery to go and get checked for it. Actually, sorry, complete side note, I completely forgot to say until right now. I only read the other day, this is a French startup company and they have created an endo saliva test that you actually can detect endo from a saliva test. I am like, oh my God, take all my money. How can I like help the funding? I literally like screamed when I saw that on Instagram. I think that was Monday morning. Like in terms of how much lives that is going to change for women, it's unbelievable research that's coming out. So look, we're going in the right direction, definitely. I hope you guys got something from this episode. I hope I did it justice. I hope you've loads of ammo to go to your GP next week and be like, you're doing my bloods. I want to know my B12. I want to know my CA125. You know, go back and listen to their episodes again. I'll link them below and kind of like what I think you need to listen to get all the information. We have really good nutritional therapists, like I said, working for me in the clinic alongside myself. You'd be more than good hands with any of them. If you can't really wait 3 months to see me, there's, you know, or other people, most nutritional therapists will be able to help you in this area as well. So yeah, I will chat to you all next week. I'm sending so much love to anyone who is nodding along the whole time being like, that is me, that is me, that is me. Keep pushing. You will get there. Don't take no for an answer. Your pain is valid.